On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, a podcast brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other publications. And today we're happy to have with us Ian Jeffrey, who's co-founder and CEO of a beautiful insurtech called Breathe Life. I say beautiful because I love that name. And you're up in Montreal, I think, right, Ian?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm excited to be on the podcast today.
Yeah, and so you've done some entrepreneurial activities in Montreal, but also out in Silicon Valley. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into Breathe Life.
Sure. Maybe I can start from the very early days. My father was a senior executive at an insurance company, and he used to tell me all the time, don't ever try to start a business. It's too much work. And I clearly did not listen to him. So I've been creating my own jobs for a very long time, starting way back when I was 12. But I've been an entrepreneur in tech specifically since about 2006. Born and raised in Montreal, but at that time I left Montreal and I was chasing the startup scene as many people do. And I went to Silicon Valley, specifically in San Francisco, and I joined up a friend and we built the very first picture sharing app on the planet. Today, it's very normal to take pictures and share them in real time with your phone. But at the time, that was a very foreign concept. There was no such thing as a data plan. There was no iPhone. There was no 1-megapixel cameras. And we believed that one day we would do this and it would be part of the things we do on a daily basis. And so we started building this thing that we called Radar. And sure enough, we were right. But we were a bit ahead of our time. And we raised some smart venture capital money, including from Reid Hoffman and Joey Ito and Tim Draper and Jeffrey Moore and just people that are very, very smart individuals as investors. They saw the future as we did. But 2008 happened and we were fundraising for our C round. And as we all know, very difficult time to be raising money. And so we ended up selling the company to Shutterfly. And I was at Shutterfly for a couple of years before I really wanted to come back home in Montreal and be with my family. So I came back to Montreal in 2010, and then I went to the other side. I started doing some investments. I launched the very first startup accelerator in Canada at a time where there was only Y Combinator and Techstars, and it was a model very similar to theirs. And I did that for about 3 years. Did about 60 investments over the course of those 3 years, and eventually got tired of helping entrepreneurs and wanting to do it again myself, not as an investor, but really as building and operating. So I joined an early stage startup called Password Box here in Montreal, and we eventually sold that company to Intel. Very great story all around. And then I found myself working in a very large organization, of course, and I was there for about a year and a half before I became general manager of that unit for Intel, and had a team of about 100 people working out of Montreal and building a password manager so people can manage their identity online. And fast forward a few years, Intel sold our group to a private equity firm, and that private equity firm, after about 6 months or a year, decided that they were going to consolidate and that our product was mature enough and no longer needed 100 people in Montreal. And so we shut down that operation for Intel, or for the private equity firm, I should say. And that's when I started thinking about the insurance world. So this is late 2017 now, and I was looking for my next venture, and the situation with the private equity firm was kind of the kick that I needed to really start focusing on what I was going to build next. And I wasn't sure what it was, but I knew three things that were very, very important to me in my next venture. And those three things were, first, I wanted the timing of my next venture to be right. And as entrepreneurs, the timing is the thing that you control the least. the years in the valley were I was way too early for the way we were thinking. And obviously, everyone knows Instagram, and Instagram was a slam dunk. But basically, what we built was Instagram 3 years before its time. And so I was thinking about what industry really is in need of help right now. And the second thing I was thinking about, as crazy as this may sound, but as a tech entrepreneur, this is an important one. I wanted there to be a business model, a clear business model, right? I wanted paying customers from the beginning, right? I didn't want to figure out how to make money after building a large network of individuals and whatnot. So I wanted there to be a real payment. And the third thing is I'm now 42 and I have two boys, seven years old and 10 years old. And I really wanted to build something that I felt they would be proud of and that would bring good value to the world. And when I started thinking about the insurance world, I was like, feels like this is checking all three boxes, right? Technology is still not yet deeply entrenched in the insurance world. There's a real business model. And fundamentally, the products that are being sold and purchased are really, really good value, right? Life insurance is potentially one of the most selfless thing that you can purchase, and you will never benefit, never reap the benefits, and your families and your loved ones will. And so I said to myself, like, this feels like it's checking those boxes. And I started talking about this with some friends. And one of those friends was someone that I met at Password Box, and he really latched on quickly to this idea. And the reason he latched on is because when he was 9 years old, his father passed away. And of course, that's a very sad story, and there's all kinds of emotions that come with that. But his parents had great life insurance, or his father had great life insurance, and therefore he reaped the benefits of it. And his mother was a stay-at-home mom, so it was a single-income family. She never had to work. They kept a house. They kept a car. He stayed in private school. Like, it's basically the perfect story of what having great life insurance can provide to families. And so he immediately really latched on to this. And we got together, four of us, and we started working on this in January of 2018, officially the four of us.
I'm sure in that long soliloquy there, Ian, you're leaving out like a lot of martinis and steaks and cigars and bourbon and great conversations with people and probably a bunch of sharks in Silicon Valley. I mean, that was the clean version. I'm taking it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us, go ahead.
No, I was just laughing. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. So tell us a little more about Breathe Life. Where did the name come from, and what is the one thing you guys do extremely well, in your view, at this point?
Well, it's an interesting story, to tell you the truth. The name Breathe Life comes from our origins, which in the beginning, our belief was that the big opportunity was to build what I would call like the insurance brand of the future. So going at it much like Ladder or Ethos or even Lemonade in the PNC world, right? Building that brand and trying to disintermediate the advisors and the insurance carriers and the traditional incumbents. And so we started very early on with that in mind. And as we started building and building relationships, and obviously, even if you're going to do that, you still need to work with the carers and you still need to work with the reinsurers, and you need some fundamental relationships. And as we were talking to potential partners, more and more, it was just sort of unfolding in front of us that may not be the right opportunity, that we may have been looking at it the wrong way, and that the real opportunity may lie more in actually helping the incumbents and helping the advisors do a better job at what they're doing on a daily basis. And it's sort of this hypothesis sort of started forming, late Q1 2018 or something like that, and then really getting more and more firm. And over the course of the summer of 2018, that's when we stepped back and we said, what are we doing here, right? Like, this doesn't feel right, and there's this opportunity that seems to be very real and very big and potentially much more powerful to accomplish our mission to deliver financial security. And so summer 2018 is when we decided that, you know, we were dropping this B2C thing, and we were going to focus on helping the incumbents, these large companies and, you know, these millions of advisors around the world to do a better job at what they're doing through technology, because the tools that they have today are just, you know, really terrible. And so the name Breathe Life comes from the origin of being a direct-to-consumer business. And, you know, we've kept it because, you know, we are still, you know, it's still a very positive, very refreshing angle that we're bringing to the table. And, you know, although today we're doing more than selling just life products, we're selling other product lines as well. But we've never felt a need to really change it. And so that's the story about where the name comes from.
Okay. So are you guys a carrier or MGA or something else, hybrid?
So essentially, you know, the platform that we've built is a white label solution, and it enables advisors and carriers to sell their products digitally in a very user-centric experience. And so we're not a carrier, and we're not an MGA. Our clients are the MGAs and the IMOs and the distributors and the carriers. We do not have a license. We are more like the plumbing, right? So we are the tool,
okay,
that we want advisors to use in order to be better at what they do today, be faster, and ultimately deliver a great experience to their prospects, and therefore sell more products because they have better tools and because the consumers are being better served.
Okay. So can you talk a little more about the tool? You mentioned the tools advisors have today are terrible. So you want to provide a different set of plumbing tools. What are some of the things that you do to make it to turn ultimately into a better experience overall?
So to me, there's basically three categories of tools that are at the disposal today. There are tools that have been built by insurance carriers themselves, right? Like the internal teams or the distributors themselves. And, you know, our belief is that it is very powerful to combine a group of individuals like us who are fundamentally software developers with the know-how and the experience of someone who knows the insurance world. And combining those forces together will create a much more powerful experience for everyone. And so we do not believe that a software that was developed in-house can be as powerful as a software that is licensed across you know, dozens of carriers, which is enabling us as a software provider to build, measure, learn much faster than something that an internal carrier would build or a distributor would build internally. Right? So that's sort of the premise is we can do better as a collective than anyone would be able to do on their own. And so there's a suite of tools that are custom built internally that we don't believe are very good. The other suite of tools are, you know, the legacy providers, and there are many out there, which, you know, own a big part of the market, and that's fine. And some of them have, you know, hundreds of carriers, and potentially thousands of distributors. But part of the problem that they have is they've been around for 20, 25, 30 years, and that is a problem in itself, right? They are dealing with legacy code, legacy software, and therefore they're not able to do the types of things that we're able to do with software that's been developed since 2018. That's the second bucket. And then the reality is there's still a large portion of insurance policies that are sold on paper. And so, you know, that is sort of like the third technology that's out there. And obviously paper comes with all kinds of problems with, you know, errors and back and forth between advisor and consumer and advisor an MGA or advisor and carrier and all that sort of back and forth, creating all kinds of noise that is not necessary in modern day. And so those are the three sort of existing technologies that we're competing with. And then there's the other, you know, modern startups like us that are out there that are trying to do similar things and trying to enable advisors with better tools.
Yeah, it seems like that first category, that homegrown stuff, that there's been over the years since InsurTech's been around, maybe 3-4 years or so, kind of a defense of that, well, we built it must be good, and we invested all this money in it must be good. But like carrier specific systems seems to be the biggest competition to the new kinds of software. Do you think that's kind of breaking down? I mean, not just your firm, but are you seeing kind of cracks in that wall? Because I hear that not just I just heard that from somebody in the surety business who are trying to revolutionize the way surety is sold, and they're saying the same thing. The homegrown solutions are the ones that seem to be the biggest competition.
Yeah. It is a bit this. We encounter that conversation very quickly. We call it the build versus buy, right? And you know, the reality is, I think this is an industry that has suffered from the if it's not built here syndrome, it can't be any good. But that has changed. It's changed a lot in the last 2 years. I think they just don't have a choice, right? Because carriers are pouring tons of money, and we have an example, you know, a carrier that's very close to us that, you know, they're not a client yet, but we spend a lot of time with them, and they share a lot, and they've spent $35 million on an internal tool over the last 3 years. And in the last 2 years, we built something that is in market, that is driving value. We've raised $4.7 million, and we have 9 clients, and they spent $35 million, and they have nothing to show for it. Nothing's in market.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, you know, the way in which an insurance carrier operates is very, very different in the way that a startup like us operates. And I'm not saying one is better than the other. The insurance carriers are way better than us at everything that is insurance. But we are way better than they will ever be from a software development perspective, because that's our bread and butter, right? And so we encounter conversations with CTOs at, you know, some of the largest insurance carriers in the U.S., top 10 carriers, and the CTO literally is telling me, and this is not me, he's saying this to me, I cannot hire people like you, and therefore my best solution is to partner with someone like you. And was like, we're here to help. And the power of the collective is a crazy value for the carrier, right? They are paying less because it's already in market. The costs are shared across all clients, and speed to market is much, much faster because it already exists and it's already delivering value. So I'm happy to have the build versus buy discussion with anyone, because proof is in the pudding, right? It makes so much more sense to partner than to build internally.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it makes you wonder where and how carriers can differentiate themselves in the future, now in the future. I mean, what are they really going to be good at? Product development, pricing, technology, the quality of their field, their, you know, distributors, agents, brokers, advisors, et cetera. It really, you know, it really does beg the question on for a vast majority of the carriers out there.
It's very interesting because this, I've heard that comment before, and I've had multiple answers to it, but I just came up with one that I've never shared before. I just made it up right now. You know, to me, it's kind of like cell phone providers, right? Like, why would you go with Verizon versus AT&T or whatever? Right, it comes down to the quality of the connection, of course, but it comes down to product selection, customer service, pricing. It's the same sort of thing, right? Like, ultimately, that's where they need to start differentiating, right? How are you servicing your clients? You know, are you going to be around for claims? Like, all these things that really should make the difference between between the product that you're buying, right? I think you're right. They need to find new ways to differentiate, and they need to be creative. But it's inevitable. It's going to happen.
Yeah, definitely. So one of my questions for you was going to be about the pivot. It sounds like you've already pivoted. You mentioned late 2018 with a shift away from B2C. Can you just give me a snippet on how it works between the carriers and the advisors and the role that you play? In other words, is it a place for people to shop, quote, bind, et cetera?
So the experience is really driven for the advisor, right? So but it's not the advisor who's paying, right? So we have clients that are distributors, and we have clients that are carriers, right? And so our focus has been speak to the carrier, get them to buy our software, and then they turn around and make it available either to their captive audience or to their independent advisors through a distributor. Doesn't really matter to us. The priority for us is getting product on our shelves, and the way to get products on our shelves is through the carrier, right? And once we have a critical mass of products on our shelf, then we're able to start talking to the distributors, which we've already started to do. And we have one distributor that's on board that has thousands of advisors, and they are now unlocking three of their carriers who are also clients of ours to those advisors. And therefore, the advisors that work with that distributor will be able, through our platform, to get quotes in real time across multiple carriers and drill down to the carrier or the product that they want to sell to their client, and do all of that through our software. And so game plan is get as many carriers on board, build a product shelf. That enables us to unlock the distributors. The distributors bring us into the advisor communities, and we deliver such a great experience to the advisors that they will focus on selling the products that are available on our platform. And as we add more and more, they will have more and more optionality.
And are you guys in Canada right now, or are you elsewhere as well?
Yeah, Canada and U.S.
Okay. So back to the purpose, the brand essence, if you will, of Breathe Life. A product, a key product you mentioned is life insurance. A selfless purchase. How do you see? When I understand, one of the biggest challenges these days in the life insurance business is convincing. It's always a product you had to sell versus people had to buy. It's like one of those reverse sale type things. But the younger generation, again, I don't mean to stereotype, but I'm told that it's hard to find advisors and agents, brokers who are in the under 40 age category, and it's also hard to sell to that, harder than, say, baby boomers to sell to them this product. Have you guys experienced that and have heard that? And maybe I'm wrong, and maybe there's a new mousetrap that's been invented here with a new customer experience.
No, you're right. Right, we agree with that. We see that as well, and so part of our product roadmap. First is really about delivering a delightful experience to the advisor so he can continue selling to whoever it is that he's selling today, which is typically not those younger consumers and middle market, right? But then we've also started enabling a whole series of tools that allows him to reach out and engage with that audience, the audience that he doesn't want to talk to today because it's too expensive for him to sell there and he doesn't make a big commission, but do it in a way where he can do it remotely, where he can engage at a distance, where he can do it with minimal touch. And therefore, an advisor could send out a needs analysis to a young consumer. That consumer can complete that off the comfort of their phone, from their home on their phone at midnight if they want. And depending on what products are being recommended through the software and through the advisor, he may be able to purchase that on their own from their home, right? And so the platform enables that. So you can imagine where, you know, advisor meets a new parent. He sends the mom a needs analysis to our software. The mom does the process. Oh, you need to buy a term 20 or 30, whatever, something simple. And here's a quote. Do you want to buy? She says yes. She can buy it right there and then. And the advisor still will get his commission, although, you know, he hasn't done all that much work because he hasn't, you know, spent time with them in person and all that, but can always be there to support the sale through our software if the buyer wants it. But he did not have to do all the heavy lifting. So an example of tools that we're that we've launched and that we are building in order to allow the advisor to sell into these audiences that are typically being avoided today because the ROI simply isn't there for them.
Okay. Well, it's a really interesting company. For those that want to check it out, it's breathelife.com. And you can see kind of things you're up to, your investors and your staff. And it's a very cool firm, cool concept. And I think your experience in working in Silicon Valley has got to be helpful in describing, articulating the future for life insurance, which I've been around it a long time myself, been around the industry a long time. And my father-in-law was a independent insurance agent who focused on life insurance. And so I was around him quite a bit back in the day when it was all paper.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
There was nothing. Literally was all paper back in the 80s. And so I wish you good luck, Ian. It's a neat company, and I appreciate you taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I hope we get a chance to reconnect in the near future.
Absolutely.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.